This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And happy holidays, everyone. I hope you are doing well. It's a great day here at WNRN as we get set for the holidays, do all of our last-minute, late Christmas shopping, at least for me. I've got one down and about 17 to go. Our guest today, as we talk about Christmas and the holidays, UVA Professor of Anthropology, Roy Wagner. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for taking time to come out and join us.
My pleasure.
We did this about 4 or 5 years ago. Christmas actually fell on a Sunday that day, and I somehow convinced you to come out. We pre-recorded the show, and I was, I guess, disappointed because I knew that it was going to be playing when everyone was doing other things, maybe traveling, et cetera. We did record it, and I believe I played it again the next year, and I just realized how fascinating the topic was, the conversation, and I am so happy that you're back today to do this again. We are going to be talking about Christmas and how it's celebrated around the world and where some of the customs and traditions from in the United States version of Christmas come from. Talk about some other winter holidays around the world, and not just winter holidays as well, as I do my homework and listen back again to Professor Wagner's conversation from 4 or 5 years ago. This is 91.9 and Lexington's 95.3 on the Wake Up Call. So, Professor, I'm doing my homework with you. I'm learning, talking about what I have lined up, and you say, oh, Stonehenge. I'm like, Stonehenge? How does Stonehenge have anything to do with Christmas? So, explain that.
Well, okay, Stonehenge is possibly, it marks the beginning of a certain motif that we celebrate at Christmas, also Halloween, also Thanksgiving, and a number of other holidays clustered around that part of the year, which is the part that's approaching or at the winter solstice, which the Germans used to call the turning of the sun, Sonnenwende. It all has to do with the turning of the sun. So you can ask a naive question here if you want. Why is Stonehenge round? Why is it a stone circle? Why are there stone circles or henges like that all over the British Isles? And I mean hundreds of them. And there was also a wood henge located on the Avon River, not far from Stonehenge, and in apparent convergence with it for purposes of worship and observation. There were also henge-like structures, some of them huge, in Germany and France. Why are they round? They're round because the year is round and because the sky is round. You have to remember that Stonehenge was built about 5,000 years ago at a time when none of the languages that we recognize were spoken in Europe. The henges were not built by Druids. They were not built by Celtic speakers or Germanic speakers or French speakers. The people who built them probably have the same DNA as the folks that live in Europe.
And that comes, so we start with Stonehenge, and somehow we end up with a Christmas tree, a snowman with a top hat, and a jolly good fellow elf.
Elf plus reindeer. Chuckling, flying through the sky, which is actually flying reindeer are a Siberian custom.
So Stonehenge, a round circle full of that many people consider to be almost magic,
yeah,
certainly pagan, leads us to the United States Christmas that we're all aware of today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right on.
Draw me a quick dotted map. We go from Stonehenge to where?
Okay, we go from Stonehenge, which was apparently a type of astronomical religion celebrated all over Northern Europe at that time, to the Nativity, to Christianity, also Judaism, Hanukkah. These things are all correlated, like the Festival of the Lights and things like that, with the fact that on the 21st of December, the sun is at the end of its decline in the sky, is turning, coming back. And who knows what those people thought. They probably thought that if you did not encourage the sun to come back or engage in rituals at that time of the year, the sun might just keep going and go out of our sky. So the turning of the sun is very important. But it's important. Its importance is such that it's linked to all kinds of inversions and reversals and role reversals, social role reversals, human body reversals. You talked about snowmen with their top hats. And we can talk about stockings, which you wear on your feet, while visions of sugar plum danced in your heads.
All right, so let's do this real quick. Let's talk about where some of the more major images related or associated with the United States Christmas come from. Let's start with a tree. Everyone has a Christmas tree. Those who celebrate Christmas recognize a Christmas tree as being a key part of the festivities.
That custom comes originally from Germany. It's a Weihnachtsbaum. And it, too, is characteristically decorated with lights or at least shiny things. Now, the reversal involved with the Christmas tree has to do with something that normally belongs outdoors, being brought into the house. And it's an inside-outside reversal, okay? The tree is drab, except perhaps for icicles and stuff like that outside. When it's in your house, it's been culturified, it's glowing, it's got lights on it, it's signifying something very important about that time of the year and about why you brought it in the house. There are actually people on Earth who turn the tree over. There in Asia and in Melanesia, there are customs where people will invert a tree and use the roots, have the roots standing up and decorate them.
Our guest today, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology. We're talking about Christmas, how it's celebrated around the world. We'll get to some other holidays, winter holidays that may not, in the United States, it's just not Christmas, but they're of equal importance, celebrated by different cultures and religious faiths. So the tree comes from Germany, and we're going to get to this. We've already talked a couple of times about reversal, and I know that's one of your key parts. And I listened to our podcast from a couple years ago. Role reversal kept popping up throughout the hour. So we're going to get to that. We're going to define that and how it comes about for listeners in moments. Stick with us, listeners. Santa, so we know that the tree starts in Germany and other Northern European cultures.
That's right. What I think is important here is the set of reversals, some of them social, some of them personal, some of them in terms of people's responsibilities throughout the year. What about gifts? Well, a gift exchange on Christmas is very old. It goes back to the Middle Ages. And it's related to the meaning of Boxing Day and role reversal at that time of the year.
Boxing Day, which is December 26th in Canada.
And in Britain.
Okay.
Boxing Day in the British Empire, the British Commonwealth, has nothing to do with putting things in boxes or taking things out of boxes. It refers actually to the sport of boxing. It has to do with social role reversal. On that day, characteristically, especially in England, the hierarchy is inverted. People of lower class or lower social standing get to lord it over people of higher social standing. And so it's like, the Lord of Misrule. It's like people who are used to taking orders get to give orders on that day.
Lord of Misrule. That needs a little more explanation for me.
That is...
Does somebody win that title? Are you voted that?
Actually, you got a bean or a coin in your piece of pudding or fruitcake or whatever they were using at that point. That is still done by English people, including English people in the United States. They will prepare a Christmas pudding, and whoever gets a coin in it, which may be a dime or a penny, used to be a shilling, gets to be the Lord of Misrule. And for the rest of the day, originally for about 2 weeks after that, everybody had to do what they say. In the pre-Middle Ages, in the very old days of North European culture, they would let that person do whatever they wanted, anything goes, for about 12 days, and then they would put him to death.
Well, that sounds like, what if my thing that I wanted to do during day number 12 was stick around forever? I mean, you better darn well take advantage of your 12 days.
Yeah, they'd probably kill you and mummify you in that case. I'm not suggesting this has anything to do with the ancient Egyptians, though. All right, this is a type of reversal. The Lord of Misrule, or the Bean King, is an extreme form of something done at the solstice, something done at the turning of the year or the turning of the sun, in order to, sort of satisfy the forces that don't want to reverse things by reversing them in, say, a wrong way. Let me go back to gift exchange for a moment, okay? For most of the year, traditionally, the people who were receiving duties, obligations, things like that, rights from other people, servants would wait on your relatives, depend on you for support, things like that. On role reversal day or Christmas, you give them gifts, and you invert the hierarchy of giving and receiving. You give them, the people who receive for most of the year, give gifts back. Okay, that's part of role reversal. There are many, many facets of role reversal. Wassail, which is the traditional English folk Christmas.
That's a punch, isn't it?
Yes, it's a punch, and for a very good reason.
I mean, a drinking punch. We already talked about Boxing Day, but
it's not the significances are not unrelated. A knockout punch is a knockout punch, but what the wealthy people in, say, London in the Middle Ages were obliged to put out lots of very good food on tables for the poor, and include strong drink, punches, and things like that. If they did not do so, the poor would trash their house. That's trick or treat, and it is related to Halloween and also Thanksgiving.
Our guest today, Dr. Roy Wagner, professor of anthropology at the University of Virginia, 1113 here on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about Christmas, how it's celebrated around the world, the history behind it, and where some of our customs come from.
WNRN thanks the following for their support of independent music radio.
T&N Printing, serving Virginia since 1982. In addition to printing and copying, T&N specializes in construction document management, as well as dry mounting, binding, and mail services. T&N offers FSC-certified printing an internationally recognized standard for production and consumption of forest products. TNN Printing can be reached at 434-971-8976 and t-nprinting.com.
Mama's Caboose, the only mobile kitchen in the Shenandoah Valley. From fun to fancy and everything in between, Mama's Caboose comes to you and creates a menu specifically for your event. You can check out Mama's Caboose on some sample menus at mamascaboose.com and on Facebook.
The Modlin Center for the Arts at the University of Richmond. Coming in February, it's Snarky Puppy, The King Singers, Kathleen Madigan, The Fred Hirsch Trio, A Night of Molly Music, the encore broadcast of NT Live's Coriolanus, and the Venice Baroque Orchestra with cellist Mario Brunello. Details at modlin.richmond.edu.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today. Our guest, UVA Professor of Anthropology, Dr. Roy Wagner. We're talking about Christmas, the traditions, the history behind it. We'll get to some other winter holidays soon. Professor, several times now we've talked about Christmas or one of its historical predecessors being related to the equinox, which is often the 20th or 21st. But we celebrate Christmas on the 25th. How did we get to be several days late in that cycle?
Well, actually, in, say, Shakespeare's time, Christmas was 12 days long. Like Twelfth Night, like Shakespeare's play, Twelfth Night.
12 days of Christmas.
Yes. And, right. I guess the 25th, like, they took that right in the middle, you know, or something like that. We had to select more or less, maybe in the Industrial Revolution, when people were obliged to put in heavy work days and things like that. They whittled that down to one day off instead of 12 days off.
Okay, mm-hmm. Easy to understand in our modern culture.
Yeah. Festival seasons like that, like for the Romans with their Saturnalia, would go on for quite some time. At the end of the year, even the Aztecs and the Mesoamericans reserved a group of days, maybe 5 days, that did not fit into their normal calendar, that were reserved for festival celebration, probably role reversals there too. Even though that tends to be a temperate zone type festival and not for equatorial people like that. So the Saturnalia was actually the Roman equivalent of Christmas and something that the early Christians who set up their main bishop in Rome, this is the See of Peter, where the Vatican is now, Christians more or less moved the day of Christ's nativity, which probably happened somewhere in March when shepherds watched their flocks by night. They moved that to the most obvious and powerful Roman holiday, which was Saturnalia. That was conceived by the Romans to celebrate the golden age of Saturn, one of their gods, the god of time. The golden age of Saturn, which was some kind of a mythical paradise age existing long before. And so the myth for the Romans was, you know, eat, drink, and be merry, pretend that we are still in the reign of Saturn. So it was one of these Roman-type blowout holidays, more or less.
We love such holidays. Another custom, where does Santa Claus come from? I think many people, we've seen different pictures of Santa Claus from many of our Northern European countries. He's Santa Claus, I believe, in Norway or Finland.
The Netherlands. probably.
I was near. I was close.
Well, actually,
what are some of the others?
there are the in England. You generally they don't talk about Santa Claus. That's an American thing. They talk about Father Christmas almost exclusively and treat it that way. Santa Claus stuff, Cinderklaus, if you will, you know, associated with chimneys and charcoal like Cinderella and things like that. That's continental and probably Germanic and probably a Germanic innovation. That brings in the whole thing about chimneys, fires, lights, solstice, the sun returning, things of that sort. Where does Santa Claus come from? I think this was an attempt to folklorize this notion of Father Christmas. As, well, there's a funny thing about fatherness going on with it's connected to the nativity in some ways. The fact that the Catholic Church celebrates the nativity at the time of the solstice by prearrangement. And fatherhood was always a quizzical and almost mystical thing in the case of the nativity of Jesus Christ. And the medieval people had jokes about this, saying that Joseph had been cuckolded by God. The Chaucerian people would get into this.
Oh, you're welcome to call with a question. We will have the phone lines open, 434-979-0919, if you have a question for Professor Roy Wagner as we talk about Christmas. And around the world, how it's celebrated, along with some other holidays. So, Professor, talk about, I think the word you used was folklorize. I may have made that up myself. But taking Father Christmas and the United States, folklorizing him and turning him into Santa Claus. When did that happen, and how has it changed from then to now?
Happened probably... at the time of that poem, The Night Before Christmas, in the early to middle 19th century.
Another Moore, one of my family members wrote that, right?
Yeah, you guys are very good at folklorizing
things. Yes, yes.
Must run in the family.
Yes. So we go back to 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and that has set forth so many of the images that we have today?
Yeah, this is, you know, more reversals, like I said. Stockings are something we wear on the feet, which Santa fills, while visions of sugar plums dance in our heads. So they have the head and foot thing over again. I mean, it has to do with dreams being located characteristically in the head. Solid practical things being located in the feet. So you hang your stockings on the chimney. Santa comes down the chimney in, you know, like a descending direction and fills the stockings and goes back up the chimney and flies off with his flying reindeer, which were given names apparently by your family, you know, Dancer and Prancer.
That's right. Until then, until 'Twas the Night Before Christmas was released, the image of Santa Claus was quite different than it is now. Did the flying reindeer exist in any sort of major cultural format in the United States before Mr. Moore wrote 'Twas the Night Before Christmas?
That's kind of a curveball. As you know, the Dutch people from the Netherlands founded New York, which was the commercial and actually humorous center of the United States. And the Dutch notion of Santa Claus was of this guy that traveled with a elf or companion and took careful notes on whether kids were obedient or not and things like that. A lot of that came via New York into American popular culture. The reindeer are kind of a curveball here. And I do have a suggestion about reindeer, but it's not going to be one that's going to be very familiar to most Americans. Okay? Friend of mine named Piers Vitebsky is an expert on Siberian people. He tells us he worked with some Tungusic people called the Evin, existing in interior Siberia, very, very, very cold part of the world. These people enjoy summer like nobody else. And one of the ways they enjoy summer is that their shamans go off on a retreat in June and ingest some kind of hallucinogenic mushroom and claim that they have been flying with the reindeer. They claim that reindeer fly through the sky and that these guys were, you know, high on this mushroom thing. And
well, many of us are high on Christmas.
Yeah, I think that's part of the process. Or you try to be high on Christmas, and when you're not high on Christmas, you get all gloomy and stuff like that.
Yes, that is I don't want to say an image, but that is an association for many with Christmas, is when you can't match the excitement that you either feel or are told to feel that for others. Our guest today, Professor Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology, talking about Christmas, some of the cultural and historical backgrounds that go along with it. We'll get to some other winter holidays around the world shortly. Professor, so you mentioned how cold Siberia is and looking for the warmth. That reminds me that for many, or for certainly the lower half of the world, there are, British or English Americanized cultures, so that Christmas, they're aware of it? Do they celebrate it in what for them would be the middle of summer?
Yes.
Australia?
I have been there at that time. The Aussies would not like to be called Americanized. I give you my word.
British?
They don't like that either. They would say that both Britain and the United States were Australianized. Also, we must not forget South Africa, which, despite its problematic past, is a North European colony and basically was an English colony at the tip of Africa. And these people are, in many ways, similar to the Australians. And in my experience with Australians, what you do on Christmas is that you have your big dinner on Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas, and you exchange presents at the end of the Christmas dinner. It's actually done with a great deal of joviality and good spirit. And it's a wonderful way of celebrating Christmas.
What are some of the images that go along with Christmas? Santa doesn't wear a full red suit with trimmings on it if it's 100 degrees outside.
They don't do a lot with Santa in Australia. I guess sometimes people talk, after all, their progenitors, the English, talk about Father Christmas and have not bought into the Santa thing. Now, as to South Africa, I'd have to take a pass on that, because they were in large part founded by the Dutch, too, and the Dutch were the originals of Santa Claus. So maybe we ought to send a research team to South Africa and find out whether, what they do with Santa. I don't know.
I'm sure we could find some people who would like to go. Call us up, 434-979-0919. Your questions today for Professor Roy Wagner. So, Professor, we're talking about what happens in the South, part of the Southern Hemisphere at Christmas time. And Father Christmas comes back up. The difference between Father Christmas and Santa Claus.
Well, I think I mentioned something about that before. Fatherhood, since Christmas was traditionally for Christian people, celebration of the Nativity.
Father Christmas seems more stoic and less jolly.
Yeah, that's Anglo-Saxon. There is a certain shrewd, almost kind of melancholy about Anglo-Saxon things. The point is that what is celebrated at Christmas by Christians is a maternal holiday. It's about the Virgin Mary. It's about the manger. It's about the little child, the mother and child. We have this fantastic, iconic imagery of mother and child and Madonnas and things like that connected with Christmas. Generally, the father is left out of those things. And so that fatherhood, which refers ultimately to the high God in those cases, to the Lord God, the Lord God is normally regarded in Christianity as something so awesome and aloof that that we worship or communicate with Jesus instead. And so even at that point, the high God is something of a mystical figure. And in the case of the Nativity, the high God is the real father. I mean, that's the paternity suit, right? So what I would suggest is that we put something very ambiguous in its place. Note that Santa Claus or Father Christmas, or whatever you call that figure, is extremely ambiguous. And every time Santa comes to the fore, every time people talk about it or think about it, they always kind of hedge their bets. In other words, some people claim it's silly to believe in Santa Claus, but will say that Santa Claus is nonetheless there. So if you don't believe in him, you should. If you do believe in him, you shouldn't. There's always this double thing, and this is linked to the pretense that that Santa Claus is for kids and not for adults, which is actually wrong. Santa Claus is also for adults. And this goes beyond anything about wearing Santa clothes and pretending to be Santa and having Santas ringing bells on street corners and things like that. This is perfectly accurate if you keep in mind that Santa is supposed to be an ambiguous figure. You're supposed to both believe in Santa and not believe in Santa because he is a substitute for the high God. Now, you're supposed to believe in the high God. This is what high godship is all about. And believing in God, yes. Do you believe in God? Yes. Do I believe in God? Yes, I think I believe in God. So, okay. But Santa Claus is the foil for this. So, you know, you can get by believing in Santa. You can get by not believing in Santa. He's the perfect setup.
11:33 here on the Wake Up Call with our guest, Professor Roy Wagner, as we talk about Christmas, its history, social background, current and various cultures around the world. By the way, for those of you who do believe in Santa, want your kids to believe in Santa, Santa will be here on the Wake Up Call next Sunday, making his yearly visit to call some of the kids in the area to make sure they're still on the nice list just a few days before he ships out around the world. Let's do this.
Support today for WNRN comes from
the Jefferson Theater, presenting BioRitmo on Saturday, December 21st. Tickets for Richmond's 10-piece salsa group BioRitmo on December 21st are at jeffersontheater.com. BioRitmo on Saturday at the Jefferson Theater.
Ragged Mountain Running Shop, number 3 Elliewood Avenue on the UVA corner. Ragged Mountain specializes in hard-to-fit feet, injury resolution, and training advice, and features nearly a dozen brands of running shoes. Charlottesville's community running headquarters since 1982. The Ragged Mountain Running Shop.
Hi, I'm Brooke Rogers, Executive Director of CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates for Children. Our offices are located in Harrisonburg, Stanton, and Lexington. Every day, children all across your community are being abused and neglected. Children need someone to stand up for their hopes, dreams, and future. We are asking you to volunteer for CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and give a child a voice. You can learn about becoming a CASA volunteer and the January 23rd training session on our website, CASA for Children, or call us at 540-213-CASA. I'm Brooke Rogers from CASA, making a community connection on WNRN.
Make your community connection with WNRN. Email connection at WNRN.org. with your nonprofit event or organization's information. Independent Music Radio, WNRN.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you for being with us today. Talking about Christmas, it is upcoming. It's just 10 days away. So get all your projects ready. There's so many things associated with it, including, you know, get your list into Santa. Make sure you're doing well. Again, he will be here next Sunday making his annual visit to call some kids in the area. You can pass along your, whether it's your kids, again, appropriate age. Somebody always wants to make the phone joke where Santa calls somebody who's 30 years old. We're talking about helping the kids enjoy Christmas a little more. So Santa will be here.
Well, so you can ask the contrary question, the other question, does Santa believe in you? See, and or...
Well, he believes in me because he's going to be here next Sunday.
Yeah, well, I believe you. I believe you. I believe that much. And you see, Santa takes a lot of punishment because he can do either thing you want with him. You cannot believe in Santa and take credit for it and everybody laughs, or you can believe in Santa and everybody laughs at you. But Santa gives you that option. Santa is really good at giving.
And that is a key focus of dozens of movies that you can find on television right now, is those who do not believe in Santa, convinced through some event, something that happens, that now they do believe in Santa. Not necessarily Santa as a person that you can poke, but as some sort of spiritual event and emotional aspect that takes place.
You'd never do that to God, would you?
Well, there are some who do, unfortunately.
Well,
you know, there are plenty who do. Not all of them are listening between 11 and 12
well,
on Sundays.
Okay, look, God doesn't have the same kind of status situation that Santa has. God is sort of an all-or-nothing proposition. Santa is 50-50. So Santa comes up a lot, you know, comes into hand. I mean, do I want to be accused of not believing in God? No. Do I want to be accused of believing in God? Well, yeah, I guess that's okay. But see, Santa is something totally different from that. Santa is like a man for all seasons, basically. Very resourceful, capable of giving, capable of taking it on the chin, which is why he wears whiskers, things like that.
Well, you talk about Santa being a man for all seasons. So let me jump for a minute to economics, because for many businesses, the sales that take place during the Christmas time period cover all their seasons. If you don't make a huge profit in December, then the rest of your seasons throughout the year in terms of sales, you're probably going to suffer.
This is definitely true. When I was young once, when I was 19, I had a real job. I used to sell phonograph records in a large department store in Cleveland. And they would give us a commission on the sales we made, and in December, before Christmas, in many cases, our commission, which was actually a small percent of the, of what we sold, our commission was higher than our salary. And that told me a lot about, you know, the Christmas buying season. But I have to qualify this a little bit. Remember, like earlier, I remarked that Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Halloween are pretty much the same holiday, that the original wassail in England was trick-or-treat. You know, you didn't put out a lot of food for the masses, and they'd trash your house. Halloween is that same thing for kids, although it's kind of shifted. Halloween is mostly for adults now. Thanksgiving was, you know, you also have to have some guests over for Thanksgiving. It's very important to, you know, like Squanto the Indian and things like that, right? All three of those holidays, Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas, have a big buildup in the stores, especially grocery stores. I mean, you don't believe me? Go down to one of these big supermarkets just before Halloween, you know, and you've got Halloween decorations instead of Christmas decorations. And before Thanksgiving, it's pretty much the same thing. This is the same so-called holiday spirit, whatever that means. Commercially exploited, of course, but then again, almost everything in our culture is commercial, so how can they avoid exploiting it?
Let's talk for a minute about how the economics aspect, is it as overwhelming in the United States as it seems compared to other countries who celebrate Christmas in some fashion?
I think that most Europeans would see it that way.
But as much more in the United States than in their country, or are you saying they also find it to be too much?
Well, it's a matter of individual families. I remember living in Manchester, England, in the fall once, right before Christmas, and I was amazed that the English were putting up their holiday decorations in the stores about a month ahead of the Americans. So they take that very, very seriously that way, too, although they may be trying to imitate the Americans for reasons they don't understand.
How about other countries that are growing in terms of importance in the world economically? So do China and India celebrate Christmas in any way? And if whether they do or not, what are their major holidays that will be, and if not already, having a greater impact on the world?
Well, both of those countries, as you say, and they are the world's most populous, both of those countries have a lot of Christians in them. There are a great many Christian Indians. There are a great many Christian Chinese. And those people will, of course, adapt, bring in our own Christmas customs and things like that. Traditionally, though, for the Chinese and for the Soviet Union, I might say, and the Russians in general, New Year's was the big turnaround holiday rather than Christmas. So Chinese New Year's is undoubtedly, for those people, the really great turnover holiday of the year. In India, the spirituality of traditional India, and I'm not talking about Pakistan here, I'm talking about Hindu India. In India, the big festival is the Festival of Lights, which is not necessarily the same thing as the solstice. Indians actually generally prefer the summer solstice to the winter solstice. And don't ask me when the Festival of Lights takes place. Don't ask me when the Chinese New Year's takes place. They take place at different times than our similar holidays take place. is there going to, are the Hindus someday in the future all going to celebrate Christmas on the 25th of December? I doubt it. Are the Chinese all going to, you know, someday in the future, do their big turnaround New Year's thing? Then I doubt it. The Russians still do to some degree, but my Russian friends assure me that the big holiday is New Year's for them, and they prefer that.
Our guest, Dr. Roy Wagner from UVA, talking about Christmas and other holidays, how they're celebrated around the world. Professor, the 12 days of Christmas, the day that the Son of God was born, and then the 12 days it took for the guys on the camels to get there.
Yeah. The three wise men, the Magi, much celebrated in story. The Magi were actually a European invention added to the Christmas celebration at a time when it was not nearly as significant as it is today. Probably to add to its significance, the three wise men, Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar, were originally called the three kings of Cologne. That is, the Europeans made them, they're supposed to be wizards, you know, from the east, like Assyrians, but they made them into kings because that accorded, you know, they were sort of on the side of secular power, and it made more sense to them.
Three kings of Cologne.
Yeah.
And that's the city, not the...
Not the olfactory. Not the olfactory, scent thing.
Do frankincense and myrrh smell well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I don't know much about myrrh, but I have smelled frankincense, and it's very musty, but suggestive of a weirdness.
Did you get that from your Wilmans and Sonoma catalog or something? Because you can get that from catalogs.
As a matter
now.
Of fact, like, I think I did.
You know, give the three gifts that were given to.
That's
to
right.
The Son of God.
Although gold is usually in short supply in those things, and they make it up with frankincense. Those things were brought. Frankincense and myrrh were imports to the Holy Land from Yemen, and which was called Saba.
Another non-wintry country.
Tell the Yemenis about it. It is hot as blazes in Yemen most of the time. But see, this connects us with the Queen of Sheba. The place was called Saba. And it connects us with a very ancient trade route that predated Arabic civilization from Yemen up to the Holy Land. And the likeliest route for the three wise men or the three wizards to have traveled was the camel caravan route from Yemen up to the Holy Land, which that's probably a projection because they called them kings from the east and these were wise men from the south.
Well, as we've learned throughout the hour, there are some things that take their own little twist as the story gets told further along. Professor of Anthropology, Roy Wagner, here with us as we talk about Christmas and some of the other holidays. Professor, so we talk about the 12 days of Christmas and the Magi, but is that what the 12 days are? We mentioned earlier about how it's you also have Shakespeare having written one of his pieces with some similar to that title, and a relative of mine, Mr. Moore, who wrote 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, and there's 12 days, and so there's so much to it. But is that what the 12 days are, or is that another made-up part of the story?
I think the 12 days comes down to us legitimately from sources like the Bean King thing that we were talking about, the Lord of Misrule, but also from the English court, the Elizabethan court in England. Shakespeare and his fellow players were very busy at that time of the year because they were putting on plays, very often comedies, for general entertainment all 12 days. And so this was regarded as a kind of misrule or topsy-turvy of ordinarily sober court business. I mean, Elizabethan court was nothing to laugh at. They were disemboweling people as punishment. This happened to one of Shakespeare's relatives on his mother's side. So it was, court was pretty heavy stuff. But by the time James became King of England, Shakespeare was so well advanced in the literary sphere, and he's like everybody's favorite author in England. And so his players, he wrote plays for and put on comedies for this period, which was supposed to be like the Roman Saturnalia, you know, a sort of topsy-turvy world of fun in place of seriousness and things like that.
Many people, if you drive around, certainly in our area, you can see lots of lights and other decorations in the yard. Is there any historical or cultural aspect to putting both a nativity scene and a Santa Claus out front on your lawn at the same time?
Well, that's a little bit jarring in some ways. What is the connection between a nativity scene on the outside and a Santa on the outside? I mean, the nativity scene is very interesting this way. I just passed one this morning driving in the country. Nativity scene is supposed to be, you know, a representation of the nativity of Christ's birth in a manger, in a stable, which is not a house, outside of the house. It was not a hotel or a motel in Nazareth when Joseph and Mary went there. So in a way, putting a nativity scene outside is like a quid pro quo for putting a Christmas tree on the inside. You know, you put something normally inside of a building outside, then you put a tree that's normally outside of the building inside, and it's a double reversal. It sort of takes care of itself.
It's also, we go back to your topsy-turvy, the misrule, right? And for many, Son of God being the highest spirit possible, born outside in a manger in a barn.
Barns are interesting, Rick, because a barn... Well, it's a little bit like Santa Claus. It's one of those in-betweensy things. A barn is not the house, and it's not outdoors. Okay, so what about Jesus Christ, the historical figure or the religious figure? Jesus Christ is a mediator. The tradition in our religions, in our Christian religions, is that he's both the Son of Man and the Son of God. Being both the Son of Man and the Son of God, he can mediate between the high God, which scares me. he can mediate between the high God and human society so that, and this is where the offices of the church come in. The church makes use of Jesus Christ, the mediator, to go between our own wishes, our own ideas, our own wish for salvation, and the will of God, which is normally considered to be so austere and so distant that, a human being can hardly comprehend it.
11:53 on the wake-up call, talking with our guest today, Dr. Roy Wagner from UVA's Department of Anthropology. Don't forget that next Sunday, Santa will be here for part of the hour, and we'll be calling kids, Santa talking to kids. So if you have names and phone numbers, you can catch up with me either through WNRN or send me an email. Take care of it. And don't forget to check out the WNRN studio sessions on our YouTube channel. Alabama Shakes and Barnaby Bright, Robert Cray, just a sample of the intimate studio sessions that you can watch. Go to WNRN.org to see Independent Music Radio's YouTube channel, made possible with support from tune in. You know, Professor, because I'm was raised a Christian, and because I often find myself not thinking of others, we're in the last few moments of the hour, and I go, oh, yeah, Hanukkah. That's a crucial key winter holiday. Explain that a little bit.
Actually, I don't know that much about it, except that it is also a festival of lights. It is you use a menorah traditionally.
But how does it fit into, I mean, we talk about cultural celebrations. For many, what we've talked about so far, whether it's the New Year in China or Russia or Christmas in United States or England or Australia, the other celebrations that we've mentioned, ones at Stonehenge, et cetera, all seem to be incredibly high, lively, spirited. And from my Jewish friends, when they talk about Hanukkah, it has a little more laid back to it.
Okay, let's look at Jewish religion, the basis of Jewish religion as contrasted with Christian religion. Jewish, traditional Jewish religion, and also the versions of it practiced today in many cases, had an awesome responsibility, which is to relate to the high God without a mediator, to relate to the high God without a mediator. Now, this is very scary. It's very difficult to do. And you don't have a go-between agency to appeal to worship and things like this, to handle your case in court and things like that. So one suspects that the Jewish attitude is both one of attachment and detachment at the same time, which is, how you operate when you don't have a mediator between, like, the forces that be, the power that runs things. If you compare the Christian notion of the high God with the Jewish notion, the Christians actually traditionally, the Catholic Church, regarded the Godhead as composed of three. This is called the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. This makes Christ the mediator, part of the Godhead, which, of course, he couldn't mediate unless he was. Neither Islam nor Judaism has this notion of the Trinity. They both involve direct connections with God, which is very scary. I mean, who are we to do something like that, right? So Christianity gives us a shock absorber. Christianity gives us a go-between, a middle person. Judaism and Islam do not. They're very serious religions. But once again, the only way you can take that kind of thing is to be completely attached and completely detached at the same time. Otherwise, you lose your mind.
Just a few minutes left with Professor Wagner. Professor, do you? We mentioned a couple times now about how Christmas, at least in the United States, has had a quick progression, almost a geometric growth in terms of how it works, economic expense, decorations, et cetera. Do you foresee it as someone with an anthropological background who's studied all sorts of cultures around the world? Are we going to peak and start going down?
We already have, but we must have peaked somewhere in the 1950s or something, and there are a number of cyclical historians who put forth this hypothesis that a major civilization such as our own, which is now spread around the world, but a major civilization such as our own has a period of beginning, a period of fluorescence, and followed by a period of decline. I'm not just talking about people like Spengler and Toynbee, who are more recent ones, or the Russian Danilevsky. I'm talking about Greek historians like Polybius, the English writer Gibbon, author of The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
But not just the United Empire. We only have a few seconds left. But not just the Empire of the United States, but Christmas itself and the way it's celebrated and treated.
I don't think it'll ever go away.
No?
No. I think that Christmas is well established enough that they'll be having Christmas long after, you know, New York is a ruin or Washington.
Once we actually have the Hunger Games and dystopia actually strikes.
Yes, exactly.
Professors, thank you so much for being here with us today. I always find this fascinating. I'm so glad you could come back.
My pleasure, Rick. It's well, it's been a trip.
All right, everybody. Next week, Santa will be here. Please tune in. Have a great day.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is supported by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, homegrown since 1982. You can visit Charlottesville's only locally owned and operated chain of convenience stores today. They operate on Main Street, not Wall Street. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at wakeupcall@wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Brandon Wong. Tune in next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.